back on the ABC because I was filling in for Derek Gill with Tony Wilson a couple of weeks ago.
And, you were?
I'm not sure how that went. Gill or no Gill, we called it for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure whether ABC viewers were, or listeners, as they say in radio.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people viewed the radio.
I'm not sure how it went down exactly.
The two Tonys?
There was sort of thumbs up and thumbs down from various quarters.
That's perpetual.
Really?
Demanding audience, the ABC audience.
Well, I took this as a compliment. After the first night, they said, you know, there's less complaints than we thought there would be. Apparently that's good.
I know who you were talking to.
Oh, hang on. Steady.
Dear, oh, dear. Hey, I've been having a flick through your book.
Yes.
As is my wont.
Good on you.
I had a few giggles about your recollections of childhood in New Zealand and trips on your stepfather's boat and
yes.
The censoring of National Geographic to take out pictures of women with naked breasts.
I'm sure a lot of people had that happen.
I don't think at my school they weren't censored. It's just someone got there before us and clipped them all out with nail scissors.
Well, we were able to, my stepbrother and I discovered by comparing the copies in the school library to the ones at home that, yes, some sort of censorship, some sort of early version of internet filtering was going on in our house. But
you didn't really, well, the way you tell it, it didn't really matter because you didn't know what they were for anyway.
No, it was mystifying. The whole sexual process was mystifying. And of course, nowadays, I have no idea how sex education works. In fact, we talked about this last time I was here with Hugo Weaving. But in my day, there was a film. You had to go and see a film on a weeknight. And, of course, everyone had already heard what goes on. You know, rumours had got around the school. But we all had to go with our parents to the film night and pretend we were seeing it all for the first time. And as I might have said, the headmaster had a tuxedo on, like it was a film premiere.
And, well, in some ways it was breaking news for some of the people in the audience, no doubt.
Yeah, well, it was, there were a lot of, the whole story, what I wanted to do with that story was try and chart the moment when sex or sexual matters stopped being something to laugh at.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're a kid, it's just naughty, it's rude, it's sort of giggling and dirty jokes and things.
Yep.
And there's a moment where sexual embarrassment enters your life for the first time. That was the kind of moment I wanted to get down on paper.
You'll never jump up and down naked on a bed again, though.
No, I won't. No. It's funny how many people have mentioned being in similar situations.
You better describe.
Well, I was...
At the risk of...
I was doing a nude trampolining act in my bedroom. I'm not going to deny it. There was nothing sexual about it, I have to insist, in this time slot. And yes,
only because of your age.
It must have been 13 or something. And yes, one of the students living next door rode past on a bike. And I was the subject of mocking laughter for some weeks. And that was the moment when suddenly sex wasn't funny anymore. Suddenly I was the butt of the jokes.
Yeah. I liked your description of being in fear of the street bully. Whatever happened to your local bully, do you know?
It's funny because I've obviously changed the names in the book, but I decided to...
Except that one.
Well, he has such an unusual name that I typed it into a generic search engine.
Google.
As I've been told to say.
Yeah.
And discovered he's now a respected orchardist in New Zealand. So I'd like to think he's bullying fruit. A lot of bruised apricots.
Did you contact him and say, hi, remember me?
No, I did not.
You made my life hell. I just thought I'd let you know.
He was elected school bully 3 years running. He was very good at his job.
Clearly. You could send him an autographed copy and say, refer pages 11, 12, 14, 18, 29 and 33.
Well, I talk about how he, and I'm trying to think of polite ABC language, as I say, took spectacular dumps in our school bags and chucked them in the creek.
Did he really do that?
He certainly did. And I'm going, wouldn't just the dumps have been enough? Why then throw it in the creek? To me, that sort of slightly negates the effect of the first gambit.
Well, I don't know. I'm
probably best not dwelled on.
It's not an area in which I have much experience, but I can well see he's clearly a man of great creativity, and if he's turning his talents to orcharding.
Well, were you muscular at school, John? Were you bullied at school?
Look at me.
No, so you were a chaste?
In fact, Daniel Baker, whatever happened to Daniel Baker?
You haven't changed that name, have you?
No, I haven't. I'm quite happy. Truth's a defence, you see. I'm not defaming him. I'm simply describing him. Daniel Baker was a very unpleasant character in the schoolyard.
Yes.
For a couple of years and used to occasionally steal marbles.
Oh, no.
And then when you said give them back, he wouldn't.
Right.
And Daniel Baker was physically not that intimidating, but was quite prepared to, you know, throw himself around when other people were a bit more reluctant.
Right.
But ultimately, at one point, I think I just decided, that's it. I've got to take a stand. And we have fight.
And how did that go?
The first time, very badly. The second time, from my point of view, rather well.
Is that right?
Yes.
See, I never had
first time round, well, that was just the worst thing you could do was to have a fight and then lose.
Yeah, yes.
So then you had to somehow get your dignity back, because otherwise you were just subjected to terrible, terrible taunts.
And what was
the playground?
Did you? Was there a training montage with survivors Eye of the Tiger while John Fain, you know, was taught the master the arts of
no, it was
fighting?
Just okay. This is some single swim here, and you're going to have to sort this out, otherwise life's going to be horrible.
Wow.
And better to at least have the fight and lose again than not even to be prepared to stand up for yourself.
Well, good on you. I was just running, just fleeing, and constantly fleeing was my tactic.
Yes.
It did work for a number of years.
But then I never had a fight in high school.
No.
I think by that stage, that was in grade, oh, I don't know, I think it was in Form 1, but that was a central school, one of those, you know, we have this peculiar situation where first and second year of high school, you can do it, what was called, what still is, there's a few of them left, a central school where you stay in a primary school and then you went on.
Oh, right.
In my case, to Melbourne High, which only started at third form.
Right, so this is confusing. In New Zealand, we have primary, then intermediate.
Yeah.
That's just this
equivalent. Yeah.
Yeah, something.
How many
like
years is intermediate?
That's only 2 years.
Yeah, same thing.
Form
then.
One and two.
Same thing.
Yeah, so if you're being bullied there, it's over. You're moving on very quickly.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, the other thing I really enjoyed was your experiences fishing. Do you still go catching sprats?
Well, no, my stepfather had a marlin fishing boat, and we were, I remember, I talk about it in here, just being on the back of the boat one day with my feet in the water, and then my stepfather going, you might want to reel your feet in, and then I've looked, and an entire school of hammerhead sharks was just following us along, like kids chasing a Mr. Whippy van. But we were told by my stepfather, if you are in the water and a shark attacks you, which can happen in New Zealand, the idea is to punch it in the nose.
Hmm.
Have you heard that? Punch a shark in the nose. Now, how on earth you might wind up a roundhouse punch underwater? I mean, you know, that's the first part that I don't think can be done.
At least you've now learned to put your thumb on the outside of your fist, not on the inside.
I did learn to do that. That's in the book. But but then, as I say, with the hammerhead shark, which part is the nose?
Yeah.
The shark itself couldn't tell you.
No.
It's a very odd fish, the hammerhead.
Yeah. So did you catch a hammerhead?
Never caught a hammerhead, but I didn't mention this in the book because there'll be trouble, but my stepfather did go on a lengthy marlin fishing expedition, which he'd advertised around the town for some time in advance, and we caught nothing. He's in the big chair at the back for weeks at a time, nothing. So
just taking a lure, trolling a lure for days.
Just doing that, nothing happened. So we pulled into a place called Tutukaka, and a guy had caught like a 9 or 10 foot hammerhead, and my stepdad paid him some money for us to be photographed with his fish, so that we had to claim that that was ours. We'd caught that.
And for how long did the deception succeed?
To this day. In fact, this is the first time I think I've ever said that publicly, possibly on another radio show when we were running short of material. I might have mentioned it. So keep that to yourself. You're in trouble.
Oh, well, there you go. What's it like having a book reviewed when it comes out as an anxious author?
Well, it's nerve-wracking, but I'm used to bad reviews, but it's interesting because I've got two so far, and I've got one good and one bad, and the good one is in Penthouse. Penthouse love it.
You bought it for the words, not the pictures.
Well, I love it. The review has, as I pointed out to the publishers, it's probably the only review I'll get where the word tits is in the review. It seriously is. And then I got this one in from someone called Rebecca Whitehead in the Publishers and Booksellers Weekly. And it says that my first book, Lolly Scramble, was free-flowing brilliance.
Oh, that's nice.
But that this one, the stories are often hidden behind a plethora of four-letter words.
There's the odd one here and there. I wouldn't have thought there was a plethora of them.
Which, she says, which out of place as they were, reminded me of a friend who at the age of 75 suddenly lost the ability to recognise socially appropriate language. And I went, hang on, I really thought I'd tried to cut down on the swearing in this book. So I went and did a word count of F words in Nest of Occasionals, and sorry, ABC listeners, but there are 89 F words in this book. And then I did a count
spread across 260 pages.
And then I did a count on the first book, and there were 85. So apparently the difference between free-flowing brilliance and a descent into mental illness is 4 F words. And but the thing is,
there's a line, and you've stepped over it.
But but most of them are said. In fact, more of them in this book than in the last one are spoken by characters, by people. It's a reportage. I'm just reporting what people have said. The narrator, i.e. myself, is actually swearing a lot less in this book than the last one.
Oh, well, look, just lift your game, Tony. That's all I can say to you.
Well, the publishers told me to put more back in at one point, because of the bit I was just telling you about with the hammerhead.
Yeah.
I think when I'm describing the hammerhead, I had the line in the manuscript, seriously, comma, that is one effed up fish.
Yeah, I think that's in here, isn't it?
And I took that out, and the publishers go, you've got to put that
put it back in. Yeah.
That's the nice people at Picador.
Yeah. And your career as an investigator is now well and truly officially over.
Yes. Well, that was another... Did you grow up with the Three Investigators novels?
Not the Three Investigators, but I did relate to most of the other Secret Seven Famous Five.
Yeah, there you go. See, odd numbers.
Yeah, odd numbers.
Secret Seven, Famous Five. Blyton had a crack at even-numbered teams.
Doesn't work.
Adventurous Four never caught on.
No, Swallows and Amazons.
Yeah, that's right.
And you would have been big on Biggles at some point.
But we didn't really get Biggles in New Zealand. Richard Scarry was a big deal. The books by Richard Scarry with Lowly Worm, sort of hidden Where's Wally style somewhere in the thing.
Mm-hmm.
The thing, sorry about that, listeners. The Green Eggs and Ham was a big one. Dr. Seuss, the little engine that could. I remember these were masterpieces of literature when I was at school.
Young thing.
Harold and the crayon.
Harold and the crayon.
And the purple crayon. Surely there's someone out there who knows what I'm talking about.
Not me. Thank you very much, Tony Martin. That makes me feel very, very old. A Nest of Occasionals is a selection of recollections from Mr. Tony Martin.
It's not all swearing, by the way.
No, no. In fact, only 89 words out of 262 pages.
89 words out of 71,000.
Is that what it is?
That's what it is.
There you are. See? Now, someone will work out the maths on that. It's whatever percentage it might be. Tony Martin is my co-host. You're popping up on Immortelli. Every time I turn the telly on, you're somewhere at the moment.
Well, because of the book, I'm putting myself about. I just figure I should. They've printed a lot of them. I've got to get out there. It is very much like Where's Wally on the TV schedules at the moment, though, you're right.
Tony Martin, we've called on his services because Daniel Kitson, sex god, philosopher king, whatever it is that he might be...
He hasn't stormed out, surely.
He's gone, he's vacated the building. He is our guest on The Conversation Hour today, and he will be joining us shortly here on 774 ABC Melbourne, ABC Victoria, the World Wide Web, and digital radio as well. You're being reminded that sharks are not fish.
Oh, no. Well, see, but it's a joke. See, the phrase... See, what are they? A mammal? Is that what they are?
They give birth.
See, one seriously effed up fish is a funnier phrase than whatever it's going to be, whatever the correct... Effed up mammal, that's not as good to
doesn't
me.
Doesn't work. No, it's all about alliteration rather than accuracy. Tony Martin, my co-host, it's 19 past 11 on The Conversation Hour. That's a Scottish rock and roll supergroup called The Reindeer Section. Your sweet voice from this CD, Son of an Evil Reindeer. And my apologies if you heard a little bit of our chatter whilst the music was playing there, which is always a ghastly thing to have happen in a radio studio. There you go. That was Tony Martin being undisciplined. I'm John Fain, and our first guest on The Conversation Hour today. Did you like that? I just verbaled you.
I'm trying to remember now what I said, because there's been so many incidents in radio where people have gone to a song and then started slagging their employers, and then it's you're moving your stuff down to the car park.
Their colleagues or each other.
But I think when we went to the song, the first thing I said to you was, I've never said the word effing on, and I said effing on radio so much. So I love that I actually censored myself off air as well as on.
Just
so
goes
sorry.
To show you always assume a microphone is on, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, we do.
Even though, in fact, we don't. Daniel Kitson is back in town. He's been one of the stars of the Melbourne Comedy Festival on various occasions, but he's here out of season with a new show. He's just come to us straight from the Edinburgh Festival, where he's won all sorts of awards. The new show is called We Are Gathered Here. And Daniel Kitson, apparently it's about dying?
It's about... Oh, hang on, I'm going to turn my headphones up. Oh, there we go. I sound much better now in my
That's
own ears.
That's much more a bit. It's better over here too.
Really? Awesome. I mean, I feel incredible. it's about death. I mean, it's, you know, it's hilarious. It's a real hoot fest. It's a real hoot fest from the get-go to the let-go.
Are you trying to make us think as well as laugh?
No. No, I mean, you know, that's probably an unwitting byproduct of anything that's half decent, but it's not a conscious. You don't sort of sit down and go, right, I'll make them laugh and then I'll make them think. Because if you did that, if it was that conscious a process, then you'd be a bit of a dick, wouldn't you?
Probably wouldn't work either.
I don't know. Might work. People are pretty easy to manipulate en masse.
I beg your pardon?
You heard.
How easy?
Really easy.
What do you do?
Well, first of all, you imply that a shark is a fish, and then you wait to hear...
What is a shark?
It's a cartilaginous fish.
Oh, so it's... Really? But that's got the word fish in it, so that's surely still fish applies. Yeah.
It's a fish. It's the specific type of fish that it is scary.
Mm. Yeah, of course.
The dolphins. Dolphins are mammals.
Yeah.
But according to the Fish and Chip Shop, they're sold as fish, so that's good enough for some listeners.
Well, what about the one where you go? The one I always tried to find when I was a kid. It tried to dive down deep enough to see the one with the itty bitty book light sticking out of its head.
I am not familiar with the itty bitty booklight fish.
I think that's its name.
It's a bitty booklight shark.
It's a fish with a light, a built-in light.
A fish or a shark?
I haven't dreamt that, have I? There's really a fish way down where it's really dark that has a light coming out of its head.
Well, like way, way down where it's really dark, where humans couldn't be, there are loads of glowing fish.
There you go.
There you go.
See?
There you go, John. Stop doubting him.
You're making it up.
Stop it.
People will call in, there's a fish with a light coming out of its head. I haven't made
and
that
there's
up.
A,
what power is it?
There's a cow with a built-in extractor fan on its left haunch.
Yeah. And batteries built into the horn.
Yeah.
See? That's been confirmed now by SMSs.
I don't believe any of this. I'm not gullible. Anyway, do comedians manipulate people, Daniel Kitson? Is that what your stock in trade involves?
Oh, yeah. All done with rhythm.
Look at his eyes light up with glee.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
How was it in Edinburgh? What was Edinburgh like this year? What was the controversy of Edinburgh?
Well, there was a big scandal as to whether or not a fish with an itty-bitty booklight existed. I mean, it was huge. It was really huge. It was all over the papers.
It's an international scandal.
Yeah, it was literally... I mean, I came here to get away from that.
And yet in Afghanistan, in Islamabad, that's all they're talking about.
Yeah, on and on and on.
Somebody...
In their various tongues.
Somebody called up Andrew Sachs and left a message about...
an itty-bitty booklight fish.
On his machine. He was furious. Have you been involved in any... Is it true that there's sort of a witch hunt on in the media for comedians, and comedians are now in fear of saying things controversial in England?
I don't know. I mean, you know, there was sort of like a knee-jerky response to that whole hoo-ha. And apparently, if you work in TV or radio, then people are a lot more fearful. Fortunately, I don't really work in TV or radio, so I just turn up to a room where people are and I talk to them for a bit and then I go.
Right.
So it's fine.
Are you the only... I mean, you've never even done a DVD, have you?
Never even done a DVD.
So people just... It just exists in people's minds. If we type you into a generic search engine that shows video clips on the internet, will there be any clips of you at all?
Yeah, there's a few.
Right. But that's it? That's the legacy?
That is currently the legacy. That and a really good pavlova that I made about 4 years ago.
That's on the internet.
Let that live.
Pavlova.com.
Let that live where I will perish.
So all of these shows, and you must have done 12 or 13 or more shows?
I have done some.
And they've all...
Tony, how many shows have you done, Daniel?
Wow.
Serious radio.
Yeah.
This is a question.
Hang on. I mean, it's more of a quiz question as opposed to an interview question. I could work it out, but it would be quite dull radio as I sat down and just went one, two, that was two, and if you count out one, three. I mean, it's certainly less than 40, and it is more than... 10.
So, but they don't... They've just disappeared? They've just evaporated? There's no record of them? Have you written them down?
I've got recordings of everything I've done in varying qualities.
Audio or video?
Audio mainly.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you listen back?
Oh, no. I mean, I've got these sort of like, I go, oh, I'll release it. What I'll do is I'll edit it and I'll release it. But
the Kitson collection.
But then what you have to do is listen back to it. And that's always very dull. After about painful. 5 minutes of that, I just go, oh, I'm not doing this. I think I might just go and play computer football for a bit.
Look, in the interests of just putting people's thumbs to ease so they don't have to keep texting in. The book Lightfish is called a stargazer, and it must be true according to about 20 separate correspondents on our text messaging service, Tony Martin, because if it was in Finding Nemo, it must be real.
And the cow
and Hollywood,
with the
Hollywood never lie.
Fan?
The cow with the extractor fan. Confirm or deny, Melbourne. Confirm or deny.
19774774. Not a single correspondent on the cow with the extractor fan.
Right.
I reckon there's about...
They fear the truth.
There's 30 or more in relation to the fish, the stargazer fish, which uses the light to attract food.
That, you see, speaks of our differing styles. You are incredibly accessible there.
Relatable, even.
Yeah, totally relatable. Whereas I tell lies that leave people bored.
Can that go on a poster?
I tell lies that leave people bored.
Daniel Kitson, 774, ABC, Melbourne. Do you Twitter?
No. I do not Twitter. I search Twitter for people who have mentioned me.
Right.
Which I've somehow made myself think is a more dignified and more... Oh, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to reduce my life to these little scribbles on a virtual whiteboard. I'm not going to do that. But I will search them to see if anyone said anything about me, and then I will feel happy or sad according to those things.
And are they?
What are they saying?
Awesome. This guy's a legend. Holy moly, I'd leave my husband for this guy. Holy cripes, I'd leave my wife for this guy. Holy moly, I'm so hot for this guy, it makes me crazy.
Yeah, I've heard that's what Twitter's principally used for, in fact.
Twitter was developed to allow people who are hot for me a forum.
Well, see, it's all right for both of you, because you've got quite distinctive names. So if you type your name in, you'll just get immediately what people think of you. With me, as you'd know, Daniel, in the UK, the name Tony Martin is...
Yeah.
Associated with the law that allows you to shoot someone who's burst into your house, that farmer.
Yeah, he was a criminal farmer.
He was a criminal farmer that shot someone.
I knew I'd heard your name somewhere. It's a criminal farmer.
So you type my name in and it'll be, thanks to Tony Martin, I've summoned up the courage to shoot people that break into my house. I'm going, what have I done now?
Now, sorry, are you sure that that's not you?
That's definitely
you
not
sure
me.
And I've got eggs people on to shoot intruders.
And who's this guy? What's
the background? He's like as big as, the name Tony Martin is like the name Pauline Hanson for notoriety in the UK. It was a farmer who shot two people who broke into his house, burglars, and killed them, went to jail, but then the tabloid papers got behind him. He's a hero.
And so, I mean, he shot them in the back, and they did die.
It was like,
he's a legend.
He was like the English Bernie Getz. Remember the subway killer?
Yeah.
He was like that. But now, you'll see people saying, oh, it's the Tony Martin defence. I can only imagine what the Tony Martin, who was married to Sid Charisse, is thinking of all this. Must be furious.
It just goes to show, you can probably try and get away with a few things then, and then blame it all on him.
All right, I'll say that you, John Fain, suggested that on his program.
There's opportunities here, there's opportunities, I can absolutely see that. No, I don't think Twitter has terribly many applications in the real world. I suspect it's just one of those fads, don't you? That's just going to, a technological fad that'll catch people... catch their imagination for a short while, and then we'll move on to something else.
Well, it's like it's a Tourette syndrome sort of explosion of information. I'm going to the shops.
Look at me,
I've
look at me.
Bought some carpet.
Yeah.
I've got a bit of an itch.
I mean, there is something quite... At first glance, I was like, this is nonsense. And then at second glance, I was like, oh, well, maybe there's something quite nice about... being able to engage with a number of people at what it's sort of like a more acceptable version of being up at 2 a.m. and sending a text message to everyone in your mobile phone phone book which just says, "Hey, how are you doing?" hoping to hear something back. It's basically like that. And then at third glance, I thought, "Oh no, it's nonsense." So I've glanced at it three times. Who knows what the fourth glance will hold?
Facebook.
I beg your pardon?
Facebook.
How dare you? No.
MySpace.
No.
Website.
Yes.
What's the difference?
What do you mean?
Well, they're all just different ways of reaching out to people.
Well, the website presents the work rather than engaging in social networking as a person.
They asked me if I was interested in a Facebook page here at 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC.
What did you say, John?
I said, so the very same people who might be stalkers, if we have an OB, you hire security people to keep them away.
Right.
You want me to start engaging with them in some meaningful way as part of my work? How does this make sense? They're just electronic stalkers, a lot of these people.
It seems, the whole move towards inviting people into broadcasts and work and, when they say on the news, text us in your views on the news. Just tell us the news. We don't need to be... I don't need to tell you what I think about the news.
The news is supposed to be telling me about the world.
Yeah, just tell me about the news. You know, if anyone's texting... Like, if you have a view on a world issue that can be contained in a text message, you should probably shush. It's sort of like, you know, how can you go, "Oh, I'll tell you what I think about that massively inherently complex issue in 130 characters."
Gaza Strip controversy, LOL.
There you go.
Sorted. But the news has become very... I hadn't watched the TV news for a long time, and I was watching the... 9 Network News about 2 months ago, and this was a news story. Peter Hitchener said, and in news just a hand, "There are now 10 million more reasons to buy a lotto ticket." And that was an actual news story.
Oh, of course it is.
So why not just have, and news just a hand, "You can't buy better than Kmart." Why not just have that?
Yeah, it's an ad. Advertorials. But that's sneaking in all over the place. But this whole obsession through digital media with interactivity, the idea that because you, for instance, Daniel, or you, Tony, you're a comedian and you're a performer, therefore you have to be accessible to interact with everybody who otherwise would simply be in an audience, that audience experience becomes an interactive one somehow, I think is it's deeply problematic, isn't it? It's a real worry.
Yes, I think it's deeply problematic. Tony?
Well, Tony, what do you think, Tony?
I don't have any of this Facebook business, but I know that there's some comedian in America who built his whole career.
Dane Cook.
Wasn't his whole career based on social networking?
I think so, yeah.
I'm not really a big fan of Dane Cook, though, but, you know, good on him for whatever he's achieved, whatever it might be.
Fair play. Fair play to him.
But well, no.
There are people who can turn it to their advantage. Good luck to them, but it's not quite the same. So what are we going to get in this show, Daniel? We have wandered a little bit. I did ask you before, but somehow I've no idea how we got distracted.
I've no idea how that happened. What was the question? What do you want to know?
What's in this new show? We are gathered here. Everyone you have ever known will die, and so will you, it says in the press release. That's pretty comedic.
Yeah, I wrote that. Some jokes and
handy
some anecdotes structured to highlight the comedic aspects of those anecdotes and some quasi-philosophical overreaching twaddle.
Musings? Any musings?
Oh, three musings. Three musings and two ponderings.
And very a partridge nice. And a pear tree.
Bang, three French hens. What about, you're in Melbourne, certain listeners, radio listeners in Melbourne who might have been driving home at, say, 3 a.m. and have switched over to community radio, 3RRR, will have heard you doing a show.
Yeah.
Is that something that you only do in Melbourne? Or
yeah, pretty much.
What's that about?
Well, 3RRR is the only place in the world that I can think of that would let someone, you know, I just went, oh, because this Is there any chance of me being allowed in a studio for 4 hours in the middle of the night just playing songs that I like? And they were like, yeah, all right.
Fantastic.
But it's been, you've got quite a following doing
no,
that.
No,
you have. I know people who want to know when the next one is.
There's about 12 people who listen, I think.
What about Tony knows all of them.
Yeah, I've got their names here.
All 12.
But are you must get callers. You must get regular. What sort of callers do you get at 3 or 4 in the morning?
There was a milkman who called a lot, called Milo the Milky. And there was a nurse who called quite a lot. Her name was Bessie. There was a bloke who was quite possibly mental, and
what on talkback radio?
It's not talkback radio. I mean, admittedly, it was about 4 in the morning, so it is pretty much milkmen, nurses, or people who are mental.
No, come on, there's lots of people listening to the radio overnight, and they're not all like that.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
Shift workers, insomniacs,
mentals,
all sorts of
mentals.
No, come on.
Come on, John.
I'll defend their honour.
Come
well,
on, John, they're all mentals. No, I mean, I would be awake at that time, you know, but this man... He was a poet, and he'd call in about 10 times over the space of the 4 hours, and just say about 4 or 5 things that rhymed, and then he'd go, and then he'd call back a little bit later.
He thought of some more.
Yeah.
Well, you get a very sensible standard of caller on this, people very well spoken, but I have done Triple R After Midnight on Saturday, the party show. It's a show... it's to do with movies, and people will just call up, and there is nothing funnier than asking someone, anyone really, to describe the plot of a film. Like even if I was just to say to you, what was the last, you said Finding Nemo, you mentioned, if you were to attempt to describe the plot of that film, something funny always happens. You can't quite put the plot together in your head. And so I remember whenever we'd run out of things to say on that show, we'd just go, can you describe the plot of Johnny Suede? And the caller would go, Brad Pitt is in a bath, and he knows Nick Cave. And it is one of the funniest things in the world, is someone trying to describe the plot of a movie, of any movie.
And they're not even trying to be funny.
No.
They're just trying to play it straight. Tony Martin from Northcote.
Oh, another
one. Has just called.
Okay,
anything goes wrong in his life, he blames on you.
On me?
Yeah. He says, oh, that's that other Tony Martin that did that.
Couldn't he blame the one who was Nettie Smith in Blue Murder? Or maybe the 7th lead singer of Black Sabbath? Or maybe that rugby league player? Or maybe the German cyclist, Tony Martin? There's a lot to choose from.
Have you got a middle name?
There's a lot of
I'm Francis. I like to say it's as in Francis Albert Sinatra, but I don't think it is.
So you're really Tony F. Martin.
Tony F. Martin.
Tony effing Martin.
That's right. Kevin Bloody Wilson. Do you know who Kevin Bloody Wilson is, Daniel?
Yeah, I'm aware of him.
Really? Yeah. It looked like he's in a... Yes, we're aware of the offender. We're following his progress.
Yes, we have been informed.
He's touring England at the moment, Kevin Bloody Wilson.
You're right.
I hadn't heard for years.
Well, he's still going.
He's still going.
And like Ostentatious. I saw Ostentatious still doing the rounds.
But Ostentatious is always... You'll see him advertised here. You very rarely see Kevin Bloody Wilson.
Yeah.
And he's touring England at the moment with... attracting fascinating reviews.
Really?
And he espouses a number of what would seem to be extremely racist views. Or at least that's how it's portrayed in the review. So I don't want to suggest that that's definitely the case. But apparently he constantly talks about his Aboriginal friend Nigel. So it's that thing of where you say, but I've got my best mate's Aboriginal.
Therefore.
That's right. But I mean, these
Come on,
guys.
How many Aboriginals are called Nigel?
That's right. That struck me as odd. That didn't
ring
true.
I know one.
Sir Nigel. Sir Nigel Gundawindi, to see you, madam. But there's there's a lot of these comedians like Rodney Rood. Would you know who that is?
Is it a man called Rodney who is rude?
He's very rude, very sweary. Yeah. And he was on a tour for. And I can say the word arse, can't I, in this time slot?
You just did.
I'm sorry. There'll be one more coming up, listeners.
But if we can say that. I wish I'd have known that earlier.
But he was on a tour for 3.5 years called the I Don't Give a Rat's Arse Tour. I'm going, surely at some point you would start to give a rat's arse over 3.5 years.
3.5 years.
Surely you'd have to give a rat's at some point.
Surely
you'd have to kick in. You'd wake up one morning going, I can't maintain this any longer.
Oh, I can feel myself starting to give a tinker's cuss. Oh, it's just a matter of time now until I do give a rat's arse.
Yeah, but, well, there's a hierarchy of caring, isn't
yeah,
there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But these guys, they do tour. They're troopers.
Is a Tinker's Cuss caring more or less than a rat's arse?
30% less.
30% off?
Yeah.
Hurry, hurry,
hang
hurry.
On. What are the SMSs, though? This Tony Martin of Northcote thing.
Yeah, well, this is critical. This is critical. Kevin Bloody Wilson still plays at the Hallam Pub.
There you go.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, and I don't know. I'm not saying that his act is racist, but if you
it
want
did
to
sound like that,
go to Chortle. There's a British website called Chortle.co.uk, and there's a review of his current tour, which is quite fascinating.
Okay. Look, the text messages. Apparently, someone who used to do Triple R Graveyards 6 years ago says you're talking about PM Poetry Man. PM Poetry Man. Is that what he calls himself?
No. I don't think he did call himself anything as catchy as that.
Right.
But like, he would phone up and go, you need to look in the manual, Daniel. And then he'd go, see ya. And he'd go, all right, bye.
That's it. Yeah. Bang. Yeah. My work is done. Yeah.
Well, look, talent comes in all sorts of
it's
wrappings,
good. It's
Daniel
good.
Kitson.
You know, it's good. Why overstretch it?
Yeah.
You know?
Very much the letters to the editor. Do you get John Fane would be occasionally mentioned in the? Do you get angry letters to the Green Guide, things like that about you?
Sometimes you get nice ones. Why do you immediately and automatically think that they'd be angry?
It's a gold mine, the letters to the editor. Anthony Morgan, the comedian, carries his favourite ever letter from The Australian in his wallet wherever he goes. And it was, remember years ago when they found the guy buried in the ice up in Scandinavia, the caveman, the Iceman.
From thousands of years ago.
And apparently he had a rock in his hand when he was frozen that he used to cut his fingernails and cut his hair. And someone wrote in to The Australian saying, if a 10,000-year-old Iceman, a primitive, can take a bit of trouble with his appearance, why can't the louts at my local shopping strip do something about their long hair?
Which goes to show that different people receive the news and anthropological finds in all sorts of different ways.
Furious of Northcote.
Yeah? Don't pick on Northcote. You're giving Northcote a really hard time. What have you got against Northcote?
I like Northcote. My friend Tony Wilson is the unofficial mayor. That's what I've been told.
According to
himself.
Tony Wilson.
Tony Wilson.
That's right.
And they have to trust him. He's the mayor.
He's elected himself unopposed.
Wilson Town, they call it.
Yeah, right. He calls it. He calls it. Hey, don't do the they. That's just getting sucked into his way.
Them lot.
Yeah. What else? Apparently, Elliot Goblet's still doing the rounds as well. The text messages are coming
but
in.
But he's not filthy,
who?
Though.
Who
Elliot Goblet. He's not Elliot Bloody Goblet. He's just Elliot Goblet.
Yeah. Rude Goblet.
He's never said a swear word in his life, Elliot Goblet.
Who's... I'm not familiar with Elliot Goblet.
Elliot Goblet has been round...
And I'll be honest, that does not strike me as a name that you forget once you've heard it.
He's a loner. He's an edgy loner, ploughing his own field in comedy.
You have to explain to Daniel exactly how Elliot Goblet's routine works.
I can't explain how it works. I guess
he cracks gags totally deadpan, rapid fire, never laughs, never smiles, never pauses, just keeps going.
I guess he would be, and he might find this insulting, but he would be in the same genre as Stephen Wright. But he probably predates Stephen Wright. He's been around as long as I can remember. Yeah. Just saying. I know he says... one of the things he used to say is that he had, oh God, he had 11 spy holes put in his door to stop people who put their fingers over the spy hole.
Sorry, I'm buggering up one of his jokes.
Yeah, and very well buggered up too.
Sorry, Jack, if you're listening.
Jack?
That's his real name.
Hey!
But people know that, Jack Levi.
Oh, you've ruined it.
It's like Bruce Wayne, but he's out of the closet, as
Who's
it were.
Who's Bruce Wayne?
Oh, there's some news. Type it into Twitter, you'll find out.
Who's Daniel Kitson?
He's a millionaire industrialist, that's who Bruce Wayne is.
Oh, good, good.
With a cave.
Oh,
yeah, full of toys.
I'll be good to have a cave. I got very jealous of Iron Man. The film Iron Man, have you seen that?
Yes, yeah.
That was the first time that I was genuinely like, oh, it'd be good to have all that stuff.
Really?
Well, he's got a robot that talks to him and understands him.
That's
and he's
good.
Got things that can that can make stuff that he thinks of.
But the costume is, don't you think, too heavy? Clanking about?
No, because it's made of that special metal polymer thing.
But surely it's still heavy.
No, they worked it all out, didn't they, in the thing.
And he's strong.
Yeah.
He doesn't have legs like straw.
I guess not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's not spindly.
No.
Yeah, he's a beefcake.
Yeah.
He's a beefcake wrapped in metal, doing good. What more do you want?
Well, I don't know.
He's a beefcake wrapped in metal, doing good, who's got robots that can understand him and talk to him.
But now he's got the bad guy in the new one is Mickey Rourke.
Is he?
And Mickey Rourke, I think, has built his own metal costume.
What? That's how you auditioned for it?
That's right. Showed up in the gear.
Hello? I'm auditioning for the part of the baddie, as you can see.
I've made my own costume from available parts.
Clang, clang, bang, bang.
According, in fact, to your book, Tony Martin, you buried yourself in comics for many, many years of your childhood.
I did. Well, I was a big fan of English comics. I thought maybe no one knew them here, but Sean McAuliffe said to me he was a fan of Whizzer and Chips.
Oh, did you know what
that was?
Yeah.
There was two schools, wasn't there? There was the Buster and... No, there was the Beano.
Yeah, well, when I was little, I got Buster and my brother got Beano.
But then they're both from different... It's like DC Marvel, isn't it?
But then there was also the Beano and the Dandy. And it was pretty much the Beano did like sort of go through opponents. It was like, you know, you either got the Beano or the Buster, and then they beat the Buster, and you either got the Beano or the Dandy, and they beat the Dandy.
But Buster, those ones would often incorporate another comic. So I used to get one called Core, C-O-R,
Core, yeah.
And that was incorporated into Buster.
Yeah, I've got a Core annual.
Right, so it had a gorilla on the front, I think.
What?
Gus the Gorilla. I think he was the flagship for Core.
Have you kept all these things, Daniel?
I've got a big box of old comic annual. My mum has recently turned what was my childhood bedroom into a sort of combination of... guest room and haberdashery. She's got really into making hats in her retirement, and now all the cupboards that used to be full of my Beano annuals and my old magic tricks and juggling clubs and all the Barnsley Football Club match day programmes are now full of hats.
And where did all your stuff go? Yeah, did you get the chance to grab
it? It's all in my house now.
Oh, okay, so you've got your clutter in your place.
Yeah.
Tony, did you save any of your comics?
My mother, it's one of the single most traumatic acts of my childhood.
Oh, hello.
Took all of the comics and put them in a bath. We had an old bath out in the backyard and set fire to them all. Poured petrol on them and set fire to them.
She got her revenge.
I must have been about, well, maybe I was about 13 or 14.
That seems needlessly cruel.
It was really violent and disturbing.
Seems really brutal.
It seared itself into my memory. And
what were you made to watch?
No, I didn't. I wasn't there when it happened. I came home and there was just a bath with some. It was like when Luke Skywalker.
You'd have thrown yourself onto it, wouldn't you?
It was like when Luke.
Was she weeping onto the ashes, screaming, "What have I done? What have I done?"
No, she was like, "Right, now you can get on with your life." But it was like coming when Luke Skywalker comes home and his step-parents have been burned to death.
Yeah.
That's how it felt.
I've set you free.
I think that's what she was saying. It was like, if you can get on with this, you can move on to more adult pursuits.
She should be grateful you learned to read. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, but...
You probably taught yourself to read so you could read the comics.
I wish I still had all those issues of Whizzer and Chips, though.
Yeah. What about Mad Magazine, which you tell us in the book you then graduated to?
Well, Mad Magazine was a big deal, and then there was Cracked, and then there was Crazy. But Crazy was never as good as Mad or
Very
Cracked.
Derivative, yeah.
And Star Wars, I'd say in the book that I lost money when because Mad Magazine, when Star Wars came out, did the obvious parody Star Bores.
Yeah. Nice.
But then everyone's going, bar's been raised for Cracked. What are they going to come up with?
And
I bet $5 that they would go with Star Worse. I was sure they'd go with that.
Right.
And when it came out, it was Star Wars with a Z.
No.
Pathetic.
And your idea was better than theirs.
There was nerds overturning cars in the street. So angry.
Daniel, did you do Mad Magazine?
Hello. No.
Never.
No. It's not an English thing, though, is it?
Well, also, I'm quite young, you know.
Yeah.
I'm quite young and vibrant.
Right, so you've got things like a Zoo and Nuts.
Yeah, I'm quite young. I'm not entirely abhorrent.
No, sorry, that's a very poor comparison. But what I'm saying is kids would not be... Would Mad and Cracked be too tame now for kids?
I don't know. I never read them.
They're still coming out.
I don't know.
They're still coming out, but they recycle a lot. Richard Stubbs is an expert on these things and joins us with Daniel Kitson Morning. And Tony Martin on the conversation.
I feel like I'm on one of those panel discussions I was never clever enough for, but finally a topic, yes. I could sit there with a pipe and a jacket and a tie going, yes. The youth today. Can I tell you, Mad is still red.
Yeah.
There's a certain period where Mad is red, and it's chuckled at. Spy versus Spy. Those crazy guys.
Do you share your old Mad magazines with your kids? Because I'm very protective of mine.
I think that's more to do with all your issues about sharing, yeah. and less about the quality of the magazine needing to be kept.
I don't think we have to get personal.
Well, I'm just saying you asked me, and I can't, you know, I want to back you, but
I'm happy to let it just stand there. But okay. You didn't have to draw attention to it.
Sorry,
do you or don't you?
Yeah, sure. No, it's all up for grabs. And in fact, the whole reason that I have every book I've ever got. And every magazine is on the flimsy pretext that other kids might like this.
Yeah.
Why are you keeping books you've read and remember all about? Why are they there? Oh, the kids might like this. So I'm constantly thrusting odd things towards them and the vague hope something is going to snag. And I go, yes, win. That justifies a whole attic.
I've passed on a little bit of my DNA to the next
This
generation.
Was really good when I was 14. It'll work for you too.
Even though it's a few years on.
What are you doing? Mad magazines.
Do they like it though?
There's a period where it's amusing and it's funny and it's good.
It's subversive
and
it's rude.
Yeah, and it's a bit. I see what they did there that's not the real movie. And then and then they go and then it's on. Yeah. Mm. Which is a bit like Disney on Ice. There's a period of time in your life with kids where you go to Disney on Ice and watch hard-faced Ukrainian women skate in the costume of Snow White, and that you're there with a whole lot of others, and you buy an expensive gig, and there's just a period of a window of a couple of years where the kids, we've got to go, and then never again. No. And you see the same families for a couple of years, never again.
I don't think I've ever admitted this, but we did pretend at halftime at Disney on Ice that was the end of the show, and it was time to go.
Really? So the story's had no conclusion.
Oh, that's just fantastic. Cool. I was at Disney on Ice once.
But
where
why aren't all the other people leaving? Oh, they're just waiting around because there's a
bit. Yeah, we had a moment. We were just sitting there. It's cold because ice. And the guy, Prince Charming, dropped hard-faced Svetlana twice. She went for the big lift, and he dropped it. Bang. And
She was in the Winter Olympics.
She came around a third time, and, oh, gee, did she have the killer look? And all the kids are still, I think it's the one. And parents are all a bit, oh, mate, don't drop her a third time. There's going to be blood on the ice. This has got tense here all of a sudden. It was great.
Well, we had Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. You know, that tour was around constantly.
Yeah.
Came to our town in New Zealand, and there was only four dwarfs on that leg of the tour. And I honestly cannot remember whether they changed it to Snow White and the Four Dwarfs or whether the four ran off and
just never saw the seven in shot.
In a side, the seven rolls between the four of them.
Change hats.
I wish I could remember that.
Big stretch for Grumpy. Had to play Doc.
And it wasn't even Snow White anymore. It was sort of Snow Grey or a bit off-white.
It was a very poor regional production.
There's an enormous program coming. I've got to mention. It's bigger than Quo Vadis.
This afternoon.
It's fuller than a fat man's sock. I've got
before you do, Daniel Kitson at the Athenaeum, starting on the 6th until the 11th of October. Daniel Kitson live at the Athenaeum. Do go on.
Thank you. Harry Connick Jr., Josh Thomas.
Harry Connick Jr., Josh Thomas,
Daryl Summers, and a lady you've never heard of but who works a lot with elephants in the WWF, which is a wrestling federation. So she does the two things.
She wrestles with elephants?
No, it was a joke.
Yeah.
It's more elephants and Daryl.
And Daryl Summers.
Hello, Daryl. Hello, Harry. Harry Connick Jr., Josh Thomas. He's got some stand-up coming up as well. It'll be busy and fun.
Excellent. Looking forward to it. Richard Stubbs with you on the radio this afternoon with a cast of thousands, superstars, every one of them, like Daniel Kitson at the Athenaeum, starting tonight until Sunday the 11th of October, tickets through Ticketmaster, and Tony Martin's new book, A Nest of Occasionals.
Yes, that's out, I think. It's in the shops.
It's out, it's in the shops, and you can
Not just good bookstores,
get your own copy now. Tony, Daniel, Richard, thank you all for coming. This has been The Conversation Hour on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria. Thank you.